all the ASL leadership community together. Thank you for doing this with me. I'm a little bit late. I just came on the finance committee. We have Sonia Wilkowski, Senator Costello, Senator Cargill, and I think Senator Najiki may be on here because he was up in the list before me. So, I guess Chair will leave the place of the regular chair. So, any mistakes, just bring them up and we'll just deal with the mistakes. Today we have the regular Senate 112, Senate Bill 8, and Senate Bill 165. The Senate Bill 112, I think, was the idea of the new version of the new CS, and I think the expectation that the committee was to move them out. In the SBA, will be heard first time, as well as it will be Senate Bill 65, and we'll take those. And the intention is not to pass them out, but to give them the first year of the meeting when we're here. So, we have Christy Long here. So, Christy, if you want to speak to this, or you want you and the staff to work on Senate Bill 112. And also, we have a new I version, and Senator Silver, you just go ahead and make a motion. I'll object that you see the same bill.
Mr. Chairman, CS Senate Bill 112, Judiciary Version 29-GS-1260-AM, the committee is working on that.
And I'll object so we can get Director Long to explain the changes from the version Katie. And the team member is here with us as well. And okay, we'll briefly use it. Now we've got the paperwork in front of us, and we also have with Dawn with public advocacy questions and as you need for the court system. And I think Dawn Sander is on his way here with us. So, but right now we have Burton Rock. So, introduce yourself, talk to us about the changes in the paid members in the library.
Good afternoon, I'm Director Manager Tracy Vaughn, I'm the Director of Hospital Services. So, when I was here a week and a half ago, I believe it was, I gave an overview of the bill, and after that meeting, there was a small change that we noticed that we had inadvertently left out four words. So, it was really only a couple of four words in version I from version P, and that was just that we had this inserting on page 8, lines 3 and 6, after family friend, we need to have inserted the words interested in immediate employment placement, the adoption, or the arrangement of the Indian child. That's one of the four words, and those are the missing four words. But this was just mirroring the language that was repeated in other sections of the bill. So that really is the only change from the last time that you presented the bill and what this bill does and intends to do. I certainly can go back
through the
original
highlight,
but again, that would be helpful.
Just to let you know, because I think most of us stumble on the proxy, but I think we can go back. So just that's really the question. That's very
important. Yes, you mentioned family friend in that section,
right? Is friend. Or is family member? I'm sorry, correct, Senator Costello, it's not just a family member. Yes, okay. So this bill achieved several things. One of the most significant things that this bill achieves that we worked with the other legal parties in the court system on is that it's going to bring to bear the concept of one judge, one family, such that all of the various legal proceedings that could be occurring for a child, whether it's subject to a 2008 petition or a petition of the state of Alaska, those proceedings are now going to be brought into the child immunity matter. So those are the things like adoption proceedings, guardianship, as well as civil custody proceedings. this is important because we believe this will not only create significant efficiencies for all the legal parties that typically are going to the various hearings, and to make sometimes a scheduling of those things and waiting for those things to occur and slow down the chain of pregnancy for the child, it will also really expedite that child exiting foster care through either guardianship or adoption or petitioning reunification. Oftentimes, particularly with civil custody proceedings, you've got three different judges. Neither one wants to say make a decision that could negatively impact or get in the way of the other case. So this will really streamline that. I think it will save the parties time and money in the long run and get more kids exiting foster care sooner. The other thing this does is it provides a vehicle for us to ensure that the provisions outlined under the Indian Child Welfare Act of 1978 that specify specific adoption placement preferences for American Indian and Alaska Native children are preserved. A U.S. Supreme Court case last year had made a decision that said if you were to consider for adoption based on the item you just filed for a petition to adopt, and in that circumstance, then, the court just takes the adoption petition that carries the weight. They don't then consider the adoption placement preferences under ICPA. So we, in order to recognize the importance of the Indian Child Welfare Act, and particularly for our population in Alaska, and more than 55% of kids in the child welfare system in Alaska Native, we wanted to preserve what was intended as the law. So the proxy is the process for doing that. It doesn't negate the eventual requirement that those parents will have to file an adoption, but that would happen later once we have established that they are the appropriate temporary and permanent placement for the child, which will happen farther down towards the end of the case. So this bill really benefits all of us in terms of the benefits to permanency and savings of time and money. But then also, this is really ensuring that what was intended under federal law back in 1978 is still being applied here, which is very much still important and still needed for the same reasons that was needed in 1978.
Any questions at this point? Any good questions about it last time? So, but I appreciate that. It took me a while to get used to the idea of the proxy and the value of that. The idea of combining the civil needs together is important. I think if that works, this will be good for everything. So, we'll see if it does. Well, then I'll remove my objection to adopting an official idea of three people on my assessment, three people that was finding one in Anchorage, one in Nome, and one here in the room. And so, let's take the one in Nome first. It's Melanie and is it Bunky as a clerk?
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon. I appreciate the opportunity to be able to set the legal clerk position on SB112. Clerk represents 20 tribes in the Bering Strait region, and the majority of children in OCS systems here are elected in our region. We support SB112 for two main reasons. First, it removes the barriers which currently prevent a lot of Native families and individuals from adopting Native children in state custody by refusing or proxying in lieu of a formal petition for adoption, which is required to reconcile the legal or article of students. As you know, we have many uphill battles already here in Alaska. There are some language issues. We've got cultural differences. We have limited access to resources to prevent termination of parental rights. So we really believe that any barriers that are preventing Alaska Native families and individuals from adopting their children need to be done away with. The second reason we support this bill is that the time adoption proceedings with the underlying child and needed aid proceedings, which will save the state resources by consolidating the two proceedings into one court order. And lastly, of course, which Christy already mentioned, SB112 furnishes the state's compliance with the Indian Child Welfare Act, which is pretty difficult at times. I'm happy to take any questions. Come on, stand in support of SB112.
Thank you. to Melanie. I come at you first and then, but can you just say your name completely for the record so that those who might be in it ask this correctly, right?
Sure. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I'm going to ask Nicole and Hank to do the same thing. I hope I don't pronounce up your last name, but we have Nicole. Is it Borromeo?
Thank you very much, Senator. Thanks for coming in at the last version of the meeting. My name is Nicole Romeo. I serve as General Counsel for the Iraq Federation of Mayors. You call my name NCOROROMEO. And we will make a change to the committee to come back to the Iraq Courtney.
Okay. has found out to us to inquire on that issue and does the same thing to recognize the trial court decisions at this point, or is this just not addressing them?
The issue is that we're asking, I'm not sure if I understand your question. This bill is not seeking to touch the tribal jurisdiction piece. Transfers to tribal jurisdiction are outlined under ICWA, and this bill is not seeking to modify those.
My understanding of getting a political imperative of the tribal court, I don't know if that's what you're doing.
For us, there were three tribes that have exclusive jurisdiction over child movement proceedings, and then we are holding concurrent jurisdiction with all other tribes. So at any point, we can assert the jurisdiction and take over the proceedings. So this bill doesn't change that. When there is a family member that is not happy with the court, typically that's something that the courts and the tribal courts try to figure out. I don't know if there are specific rules for how that is diluted.
Thank you. I think it's an area of growing law. It's not settled on entirely, but I think that this does is at least a flat rate at the highest level you can. So there's only the question issue. There's only asking if anything seems like we have found this pricing program. We have Elizabeth Lesson Crowe for the first last decision, and she wanted to testify. So, Elizabeth, I'm very sorry, I'm going to give us the testimony. Put yourself on the record, please.
Thank you. My name is Elizabeth Lesson Crowe, and I'm here on behalf of the First Alaskans Institute. I serve as the president and CEO of the First Alaskans Institute, is a statewide Alaska Native nonprofit organization. And we do a lot of different kinds of work. Our vision is progress for the next 7,000 years. We recognize this along with being here, and how much longer we plan on being here. So obviously, in that regard, the placement of our children is really important to us. The work that we do at First Alaskans also has to do more with leadership, that every single child in our eyes is a leader. And what we've learned through the work that we do from hosting the Elders and Youth Conference every year, we've done that for over 12 years. We also have a center internship program with a lot of young college students who are Alaska Native. We have a policy fellowship, many of whom have been placed on here in the legislature. What we've learned from them over the years that we've had the privilege of working with our young people is that we are connected to who they are, to their communities, and to their families, and most importantly, to their cultures. They do better. So that's why this bill is important to us, and I just wanted to come down, say hello, thank you for the work that you're doing, and let your support this in front of me.
Thank you, Elizabeth, for this quote, and I really appreciate it. You've been the beneficiaries of your internship, and for that we're grateful. And of course, for this bill, I do feel that every child that we deal with is here, and they get to share with this generation forward. So thank you very much for your love.
Thank you so much.
So that brings us to the place where we've heard the testimony. We have we'll have to answer questions if you want, otherwise I would entertain a motion to move the bill from committee.
Mr. Chair, I would suggest that my bill number 112 judiciary provision 29-GS5262/India from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying this one.
Okay, no objection. I will move the assist for bill 112 judiciary from committee with individual recommendations and attachment scrolls. And we'll sign the following just sign the with the attachment scrolls. Thank you very much for the Department of Health and Human Services. The next bill that we're going to have up is going to be Senate Bill 8. We have Senator Ellis here to present the bill for us today. And Media's Industrial Hemp Production License. It's the first hearing. We have the working version in front of us, so let me just grab that real quick. Welcome to the Community Center. Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate Judiciary Committee, it's an honor to be with you today. For the record, I'm John Ellis, State Senator representing District J, downtown Anchorage, and neighborhoods of Offaly and Fairview. I really, really appreciate you all hearing this bill today. It's a bill that would change state law in a way to make the cultivation of industrial hemp here in the state of Alaska legal. It's currently illegal under state law. And in order to change that, I call it the Freedom to Farm Bill. If we pass this bill, we'll consider the bill present in order to be a substitute for your consideration. A very simple, straightforward approach with no fiscal impact. And if that's adopted today, we can simply have the help of Senate Finance referral removed and move this bill to have strong statewide support, especially in our farming communities, move forward. So we're saying no to federal overreach and standing up for the Freedom to Farm for an additional crop for our Alaska farmers. There's no opposition in these tough times, Mr. Chairman. This is something we should help out our farming communities with, in my humble opinion. I had to start briefly today with a few opening remarks about the subject, and then if it's the will of the committee to go to the presentation, we're going to listen after Sarah Evans to go over the proposed bill substitute before you. First, as some of you may know, industrial hemp is an ancient crop. It's been cultivated by humans for thousands of years, and somehow it got caught up in the anti-drug hysteria at the federal level. That's why I said reject federal overreach in a very ignorant fashion when cannabis and industrial hemp were outlawed in an ignorant move on the part of our federal government. You may know some of you from American history that George Washington, John Adams, and Thomas Jefferson, two of our outstanding founders, all grew hemp on their personal farms. In addition to the Declaration of Independence, the first draft of the U.S. Constitution was written on hemp paper, and it's ironic that a crop so important to American history is now illegal. But to change that at the state level. Mr. Chair, believe it or not, Alaska industrial hemp production is actually a tool we can use to fight federal overreach, as I mentioned. Senate Bill 8 gives Alaskans the freedom to farm and rejects any need for federal approval before growing hemp in the state. This freedom to farm bill is also an issue that brings Republicans and Democrats together. That's my favorite kind of issue around here. On a federal level, Kentucky Senators Mitch McConnell and Rand Paul have worked with Oregon Senators Ron Wyden and Jeff Merkley to introduce the Industrial Hemp Farming Act at the federal level. This is an issue that's been gaining traction and bipartisan support across the country, with at least 28 other states embracing pilot studies or hemp production like we're proposing here. This list of uses, for hemp is nearly endless. This German major hemp handout provided that we see the images of label hemp products that are available at the grocery store right next door over here at Rainbow Foods, a general favorite. Hemp seeds are an excellent source of fiber, protein, vitamin E, omega-3, and omega-6, adult and kid friendly. The essential fatty acids found in hemp are great for the heart, and they have anti-inflammatory benefits. I'm going to pass this stuff out just like Representative Paul Seaton passes out the vitamin D. So this is my new crusade. Your handout includes a THC hemp snack if you care to indulge.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Also, straight label, completely straight label, and very outstanding. Also, on your handout, you'll see modern day uses for hemp. It's been used for fabrics such as clothing, hats, and shoes for decades. This has become in homes and retail. I just sold hemp products that I imported from Canada. Finished products. So that was legal in the country. This is because the natural fibers are more durable, absorbent, warmer, and softer than cotton. And many of the types of fabric used today. Hemp is weather resistant, mold resistant, and cost effective. Hemp fuel can be used as a green alternative to gasoline as it burns clean and produces methanol. This is I've talked about miracle drugs before in this session. This is a miracle plant. It can be used in a variety of beauty products and cosmetics, such as shampoo, conditioner, stimulation, salves, lip balm, and soap. It just goes on and on. Finally, hemp is great for providing building material. You can use it to make cement, fiberboard, insulation, and more, all which is naturally mold, fiber, and pest resistant. Mr. Chairman, I will now turn it over to my staff if it's okay with you. Sorry, I'm just going to go into the details of the three steps to before you.
So before I begin, thank you very much, staff, for bringing this forward. It's the W version that would be is the version. Cyril is the environmental for putting this on the table for information for us. I am going to be very supportive of it. I think it's a good move in the right direction. But we do need to have a motion, to get this W version from the list. If we can, send us a
Mr. Chair, this is Senate Bill number 8, version 29-LS-0195/Whiskey-4-3 as our working document.
And I'll fix it and give the sponsor a chance to tell us why the difference is. So, thank you, Senator Ellis. Just introduce yourself to the
Yes. First of all, I'd like to excuse my voice. I have that cold that's going around. I'm better. My voice isn't complying. But because I'm from Rio Santa Cruz, I'm sorry to have some of your hours. The CS before you has reduced the dose of rush support idea. And I'll be briefly go over them. There's three fractions to go at this point. Section 1 defines industrial hemp, which means all types and varieties of plant cannabis, sativa oil containing not more than 0.3% THC. Section 2 is identifying a new subsection that reads the prosecution under AS 1117-30-60, charging of manufacture, delivery, possession, with intent to manufacture or deliver or display the scheduled controlled substance as an affirmative defense that the controlled substance is industrial hemp.
And that's really Schedule 6A, and that's the way that they're writing our space here. It's the way that they say it was. My major was that I'm not going to do it, but I just want to
thank you. Yes, thank you. And then finally, Section 3 has a new subsection of 1738-200. An individual manufacturing, delivering, or displaying industrial hemp is not required to apply for licensures or to be licensed under this section. And that's basically the bill.
So it is quite different. What's the genesis of the change? Either you or the Senator Pacheco?
I'll go into that, Mr. Chair. The reason for the change was in the previous bill, we had a lot of sections that had to do with how a person could grow industrial hemp. They had to be licensed and have the permits. And I contacted the Department of Agriculture and asked them, what are the plants you have to have permits or licenses to grow? And they said, you know, your plant is marijuana. And since the state is voted to legalize marijuana, and because the industrial hemp is such a different kind of marijuana, which I'm not going to go into the differences between the two, we just decided that what was the need for all the permits and licensing was in our original bill. We decided that this way, I'm using these three sections, we got the final industrial hemp business, and if you're growing under this definition, you're legal on the state of Alaska, and we felt that was a much simpler approach. That people who wanted to grow industrial hemp should not have to come through all these hoops and go through multiple licensing and permitting, and it cost us a lot more money to introduce this program and allow people to legally grow industrial hemp.
Any questions for the sponsor this time? There are some people on the mighty testifying that I've given them. And you also have 20 people signed up from Cycle 165. And we're going to run some of that time, but I am going to take the minimum for this particular bill because they're a smaller in number and easier. I would ask if the agency very rapidly.
Mr. Chair, I have asked people who want to be brief with their testimony. You know, that this is a very simple bill, and we do have a lot of support for it, and we know a lot of people will sign up, but hopefully they'll stick to that.
I appreciate that input, and with that encouragement, both from the sponsor and from the chair, I will go to Fairbanks. We have Frank Torrey online, who says he's a head activist, and I do know that as a fact. Mr. Torrey?
Thank you, Sarah, for calling me on the air. I'm here for 20 more years in support of Senator Wade and Alaska Corn. He's on the air. In this place, Corn, he's on the air. 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 He's on the air.
Thank you.
have a lot of things for small businesses, manufacturing, and construction. Instead of always shipping, you simply need wood and some concrete that you cut down on a lot of these structures. You have to look at those. Concrete is not especially, it has to come out of our bodies. And it's not what you thought you were, but this is still using the money that you can put in the other wall with forms. It's freestanding with a couple of hours. But the purpose of the whole counter that you can make them have, which is structural and will take a lot of weight. It also can help with coal. You can combine half with coal and coal will burn 40% cleaner. It can also help make use of more valuable coal with iron and sulfur. And just so you know, we also use beer in a lot, so we have a big lot of beer and like breweries, and they have to be used for that. But I think that's what I'm saying is there's already a lot of stuff in place that has to be used. Anticipating a new product and manufacturing industry and the paint textiles and barcades that are poking it out of gas pumps for cars, it lowers greenhouse emissions by 85%, you know, car is in yards. So it's a very clean burning gasoline that can be made from it. So that's about it for me. It does have a lot of issues with it. But if you know, in terms of doing it, for instance, when you first started growing up, they didn't have much money to manufacture it until they were sending it to California.
to make sure that we got the paperwork in order. We had Senate Bill 165 in front of us. We had a veteran that is not done here, so he can do the opening statement. For those of you online, there's a lot of people that testify. I apologize right now. I want the bill to be here just first before we're going to public testimony. And we'll have public testimony. You will have a chance. You can also, if this is your only chance, you can send your name written for it. And we'll be passing out to the committee members. Send it to you. So, Mr. Chairman, I want to thank you for your Senate Bill 165 today. It's an important bill, and I hope it'll move us forward and measure if we believe brings a good balance of representation of the ABC board to decriminalize disease for simple alcohol possession and consumption offenses and puts in place proper accountability measures. Also, it opens up a new horizon of opportunity for youth that they have a stake in using alcohol in the past. A certain senator doesn't want me to say that we penalize young people for some of the things we've made ourselves. And I think that's a good point that the young people may have taken a stake in being in their own place for a long time, paying a pretty significant price. It's a product of an ongoing comprehensive multi-year modernization process for Title IV, and we have a lot left to work on the Title IV. We're not abandoning that remainder of the effort. We have lots to do. These are two simple pieces that were agreed upon by the coalition, if you will. Title IV is largely unchanged since 1980. It's widely recognized to be outdated and the effectual journey of the intent of the statutes, which directly impact the lives of residents, public safety, public health, and alcohol beverage industry. Board members and their staff made several big changes in response to feedback from community and industry members, as well as justice system practitioners, particularly pleased with the community diversion panel addition. That was added to the bill as a recognized treatment alternative for minor consuming alcohol offenses. This term includes the proven alternatives of youth clubs and tribal circles, which many times are culturally relevant for life or successful outcomes and enjoy strong community support. Well, I have a long list of folks I'd like to thank. I'm not going to list them just in an effort to get done what we can here today, Mr. Chairman. But I do want to say that the ABC board composition changes that we're suggesting, maybe the makeup of the Marijuana Control Board, they'll be working hand in hand. We think that's the most effective mix. Not everyone is 100% in favor of that, but we did work together with the coalition who came away with an agreement on the makeup of their board. After a very rich role, they got the money against several loan revisions, Mr. Chairman, and really hope that we can get this across the finish line in this session. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to our staff member, Tim Clark. And once again, I'm going to remind folks online that the bill will not work for community leading, and that you will preserve the right to speak on it. You are at this point that we have many people online, there's 21 people online to bring this up from FAR, from Recovery Alaska, from Juvenile Justice. And so at this point, I want to make sure that the bill sponsor had a chance to give us the concept in the bill and places where it can be found, places where we could do better. And it makes sense to frank my decision at this meeting and to have the input from her at this point as the sponsor of the bill. So, Mr. Coffey.
Thank you, Chairman Cogdell. For the record, my name is Chuck Cobb, staff to Senator Bertinke. I do have Cindy Franklin, Executive Director of the Alcohol Beverage Control Board here with me. I would refer members to the slide packet, Alcohol Beverage Control Board. I'll be speaking from that. We'll go right through an overview. And I guess some of you are helping to deal with this, and we're directly speaking to measures dealing with board makeup and also with the 121 laws, which she has intimately been involved with for the last year or so. And
just before we do that, I think I have to actually adopt the version in front of us. And so, we have a version of the CS or something, 165 local cards. And so, I'm going to get the letter from the chairman.
Sure. Mr. Chair,
been CSU Sentinel number 165 neighborhood cars operating 29-LS-14A for tax/rescue before the committee. Please come work it out.
So, no occasion to have that before us, and I would just encourage the sponsor to make sure that we see a better business for going on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We are appointing the city frequently on the Director of the Health Board and Control Board and the Railroad Control Board. Currently, our office is on the Alcohol and Railroad Control Office, or LICO. The Alcohol Board Control Board's mission is to control the manufacturing, buying, and sale of alcohol in the state of Alaska, and as we are in the TPC, the statutes governing those activities have not been updated in a while. In the meantime, we have a fast emerging and changing industry, and we have learned a lot since 1980 about youth access to alcohol and what is and is not effective, and convincing youth to use alcohol until they are of legal age. The Title IV review process, which began in May of 2012, attempted to bring together stakeholders from all aspects of the alcohol issue together to, with the goals of promoting a fair business climate and protecting public health and safety, to creating some rational regulations around all tiers of the alcohol industry while limiting youth access to alcohol and ensuring youth criminal rights, and finally to promote responsible alcohol use and reduce the harms of overconsumption. Tavor is in some ways a patchwork quilt of laws that have been layered on top of one another over the years as the industry has changed. For instance, when I was 21 and I became related to the state where I lived, there was no such thing as a craft distillery or a craft brewery. So all of these things change, and the laws that were written back before those things existed don't really fit them. And so that's one of the reasons to make time for a clear and consistent legal framework. The other thing we discovered when we looked at some of the data provided by the court system is that many of the penalties in Title IV, particularly those around youth access to alcohol, are inconsistently applied. So you can learn from the state and be engaging in alcohol conduct, possessing or consuming alcohol under 21, and might not face anywhere near the same or similar consequence as a youth in another part of the state. You have a slide that talks to the stakeholders, and we get a lot more on this. Hopefully by now you're familiar with the variety of individuals who are at the table attempting to come to some agreement on these sometimes controversial issues. The Title IV review process is still in process, as I'm sure Coffins and Earl Chicky mentioned. These two pieces, or in some sense, the three pieces contained in SB 165, are three small pieces of an overall greater effort, and we do hope to have one article next year with the remaining work in it, and hope to go into a deep dive next session when everyone has a bit more of time. So, is this where I'm coming back to you, Mr. Brook?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the record. Thank you, Senator Chicky. In the interim, the spring of 2015 winter session, we reviewed what was in the campaign to reform the Senate Bill 99 with the stakeholders of the Title IV Review Group to ensure that it reflected consensus. The Alaska Chair of Government Affairs Committee worked to flag language in the comprehensive bill that may benefit from further refinement. In December 2015, just a few months ago, the steering committee recommended a new two-track process for the Title IV rewrite, streamlined with the same bill. So, the 2016 priorities being reflected in this bill, Senate Bill 165, which should be implemented now, and a further refinement of the comprehensive package over the coming interim. Some of the strategic reasons for the of course, adjustment were the issues in repeating with this session, there are related issues with the budget, and the priorities of this bill could be implemented now and begin to benefit young Alaskans immediately, and also that the Narrow Water Control Board and the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board, which will be on the same office and staff, will be able to learn information.
we are going to continue to re-engage the stakeholders of perception and the subcommittees to continue to work on several areas that need to be continuously refined, and that's the goal from how that works, and the regulations varying state to state, processing improvements, local options, and other matters. So the work continues, Mr. Chairman, and the remaining recommendations will be back to bring back next year with a full package in October, again, in the interim. The CNU Senate Bill before me focuses on very discrete recommendations that you see make up of the work, and those program qualifications, better license passes law, and better consumer health and home laws, and so we'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you for the record, Sandy Franklin again. I am Mr. Chair of the SB 165, and Senators House on work at the beginning of the bill on the composition of the ABC Board as Senator McKinney mentioned. This simply creates additional designations instead of the currently two open public seats, creates a designation of the public safety seat and public health seat. This composition mirrors that of the Marijuana Control Board, which also has two industry seats. So we're seeing how that work composition works in action on the marijuana side. And from my perspective as the director, there's little difference between the boards in the sense that, you know, as being all boards, it kind of depends who the governor appoints to the other board seat. But certainly, the designation of a public health and public safety seat is important to our public health and public safety partners to feel like they have a representation on the ABC board. That was the work that came out of the committees. Well, regarding the work on the minor consuming penalties, if you go through your slides, and there's a lot there, you'll see eventually a slide in the pie chart that some of the data I mentioned earlier from the court system. Most minor consuming charges are first offenses. In other words, most young people come in, get one charge, and then they're out, and you don't see them again. The minors that the WPA individual charges tend to encounter problems in the criminal justice system as well. And minors as the original municipal prosecutor, we saw this often in court. Do you know those two components lies in your character on the agency of penalties? Well, those get put side by side. The current minor consuming scheme and the minor consuming scheme under SB 165. It is decriminalizing minor consuming and possessing alcohol, because even though when you look at 416.05 as it exists today, it states that first and second offenses are violations. They really aren't. And the Court of Appeals has said they have so many obligations attached to them that they look more like criminal penalties, and that's why the court system has to handle them that way. And this is very dramatic, the number of appeals that have come out in 165 to make minor consuming violation. But we learned from some of the work the court system has done on minor consuming is that having heavy penalties that are created these sort of lifelong consequences, driver's license revocation, committing a service that leads to arrest if they don't show up, or appearances that lead to arrest if they don't show up, is an inconsistent application of the penalty. So in other words, officers have some kind of judgment in the field on, is this a person who is worthy of the ticket? This bill attempts to get clear, consistent, and swift enforcement across the board. When an officer goes to the party, the sheriff's going to write anybody a ticket instead of looking around to see if they have a good parent, and if so, not writing a ticket. What our current scheme does is make our minor consuming alcohol court hearings look very disparate, both racially and socioeconomically, and the law shouldn't do that. So I feel very passionately that this will even this out and get officers back to writing tickets to any minor who possesses or consumes, again, without the heavy criminal-like consequence on a minor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chuck Copeland, Senator Sanders, if you can, in addition, by reducing these two mature violations, we would also spare the minors the court view appearance, which is a real limitation of user employment for a lot of first jobs. It's also a limitation of federal civil laws having the alcohol offense on the record. So, these, this bill addresses that also, and The other thing it does is it gets rid of places in the law where minors or vehicle insurance can be canceled, as well as driver's license canceled for non-violent offenses as determined. So that is the overview, Mr. Chairman, and if you would like, I'm not sure where I'm time, I can just briefly do the summary changes since that may repose.
Yes.
I understand, Mr. Chairman, section 1 of the bill, the first one was relating to the executive director's experience affected and made up of the ABC Board, Blair and Thomas Committee, changed that by removing that section so that the director's position doesn't politicize or influence any other board. So we want to serve a straight board makeup as a fundamental. In section 8, we had a reference to community diversion panel. Making clear that youth boards and tribal circles are among the options available to youth for alcohol education and treatment. Because they are already left out of the previous bill version, and they are more culturally relevant in the areas around Alaska and very successful. Section 9 is a stylistic change from the under the age of 21 to under 21 years of age, the legal pointed out, and does add a reference to community diversion panels, making clear that those are options available to youth for alcohol education and treatment. Section 10 was deleted from the previous bills, renumbered, because we inadvertently deleted court discretion in youth enrolling in juvenile alcohol safety action program. Section 11 amended court records of persons under 21 years of age, adding the terms or a similar ordinance in a municipality, making it clear that if we change state law to keep minor concealment and alcohol possessions off court view, if there's a similar ordinance in the municipality that it was charged under, that those would also be on the court view. So on the other side of the state law or municipal law, those minor violations are not appear. Finally, Mr. Chairman, under definition 3, I have definition of community diversion panel, and which means that this court order would selected by the court to serve as a sentencing option for a person convicted under this section. And we amended the applicability section to reflect the changes. We did discover after the hearing we have a minor amount which we can roll over the next time the bill comes out, yeah, the community diversion panel to reflect that definition.
Sure. We've done a lot of planning for him for a public testimony. We had so many people who signed up today that one of the reasons I even decided to run for office is I was good off work at $25 an hour. Testify and they just explain all this and they get to testify. So I'm very, very sensitive to those who take time out of their life to come testify. And there were many, many people with me. And so my sincerest apologies to not get the public testimony. But then, as we had the bill before us, it was a narrative to get the public testimony. So thank you very much. And for those of you who tuned in, this will be heard again. I do not know exactly when there is an amendment. This is the sponsor proposed. The public testimony will stay open. And we will have a robust discussion on this bill as we move along. So thank you very much to the city itself and Ms. Frankfurt. So I'm going to hold this bill up. And you can keep the amendment in your packet for further information. Thank you for letting me share the meeting. I'll call it these two hours on now. I think that was a meeting. I had a chance to testify. My apologies. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.